This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. Of course, it is Friday, the 9th of June. What's going on in the UK right now?
Yeah.
What is going on?
I don't even know anymore. I mean, I've been keeping track of it this morning, and now I walk away for like 5 minutes, and the whole world is turning over
upside
there.
Upside down, yeah.
It's upside down indeed. But we're not talking about that yet on Enterprise Biz Bytes. Today we are talking about, we'll be talking about mayonnaise a little bit later on. We've got stories about an illegal selling of information over in China. We'll be talking about drones, as usual. Mayonnaise, as I mentioned, AI makes a welcome reappearance on this Friday as well. Finishing up with some vending machines in Russia selling some very strange products.
Nice.
First off then, kicking off with this story that originally was picked up by The Verge, I think, and it picked up from Time magazine as well, how Chinese authorities have busted an underground network selling iPhone users' personal data.
Yep, so 7.36 million worth of data have been sold. This is according from, like you mentioned, you know, the Wall Street Journal report. And it consists dozens of employees of direct Apple suppliers and other firms Apple outsource work to. The group gathers usernames, mobile phone numbers, Apple IDs and other data. And then they sell it to a piecemeal for between, you know, what, $1.47 to about, you know, $10 per data point. And a total of 50 million yuan, which is about $7.36 million, have been made.
This is coming out of southern Zhejiang province, across Zhejiang, Guangdong, Jiangsu, Fujian. Now, this is the thing with like the Apple suppliers and the Apple kind of network in China, if you like. For a few years ago, before the Apple stores officially opened there, you could buy Apple products, but they were what were on the known as the grey market. So you would have Chinese nationals traveling down to Hong Kong, spending a fortune on iPhones, coming back to the mainland, and then, of course, selling them for a much larger price. Of course, none of these phones were unlocked.
Yeah.
But the Chinese, being the Chinese, found a way around that, inserting certain chips inside the iPhones and one another. But the idea of information being sold in China, data in particular, it's nothing new.
No. The marketplace has always been, you know, it's just a dark area. Their dark web is as equally as active as the normal web in terms of buying data and stuff like that. And, you know, the government is obviously, you know, very protective of their data. Hence, they have a lot of, you know, walls of, you know, the security walls, you would call it.
The Great Firewall of China.
The Great Firewall of China, you know, because they're very protective. But internally, behind those walls, there are a lot of things that are going on.
It's very permeable.
It is.
Even if we look at data being sold that isn't digital, I'll give you an example. You can come out of any of the subway stations in the city of Beijing, and you will hear somebody shouting the words "Fapiao." And the first time I was there, I'm like, what the heck is this? It's a receipt, a type of receipt. So let's say, for example, you've been on a business trip and it's taken you, 3 hours, and you have supposedly spent a particular amount of money. You can go to these people who are selling other people's receipts and buy a fake receipt and then have a fake claim.
Wow.
And, you know, this is a regular thing. This happens, or it used to a few years ago, happened all the time.
I mean, you know, I'm just thinking about, like, this happens on a large scale basis. So people, the police got involved, and then they had to investigate for many, many months, and then they cracked down on this syndicate that's doing this. But what about the smaller guys in other countries some guy sitting in his basement, five guys sitting in their basements, you know, just leaking information that they can tap into, right? So it's scary to think. I mean, you think that you are safe, or your data is safe in the cloud or in a network somewhere, but you have no idea where it's leaking out to in the internet.
So initially, people were assuming that it was, you know, Apple employees themselves in China that was, you know, leaking out this information. But then, you know, later on, through more, you know, investigation, they found out that it wasn't officials working with Apple in China. It was their suppliers. It was the people that was working with Apple. The people that they outsourced to. Those people were the ones who, you know, they were trying to make an extra buck. You know, because they're already getting money from Apple, you know, for you know, outsourcing the projects to them. And then they decided, like, oh, we can actually make more money and let's outsource.
By selling the data.
Yeah, no. Sell the data that Apple has given us. And like, it's weird because I'm surely they would have signed like an NDA. And even if you're a...
Dude, what does an NDA mean in China?
Yeah, no, but like, yeah, but like, even if you, if you're an employee in Apple, even if you're just a front of the retail store,
right,
you actually have to sign an NDA.
Yeah, yeah.
That you cannot disclose anything. And I know this because one of my nephew, he's in Melbourne and he's actually just, you know, work in an Apple store, and he had to sign like, you know, NDAs, and I'm like, why? And then it's like, I'm sorry, but I can't actually tell you. And I'm like, oh my god, I want to know. This is such an interesting thing. Like, you're just at the front of the store. You won't know what Apple 10, iPhone 10 gonna look like. Yeah. But he's like, yeah, but I can't say anything. And I'm like, oh, interesting. So within Apple itself, it's fine, but Apple will probably need to, you know, go back and look at their contracts with the, you know, suppliers and the
how
people
safe
that they
are.
Yeah, because, you know, that's,
I mean, like you say, their ecosystem is safe. It's outside of that ecosystem. Mm. You've got to be a little bit worried. Mm. All right, moving along, we have another story coming out of China. We've had a few this week, haven't we?
We have. There's been a good bit of a stories from
good
China
stories,
and
yeah.
now, you know, slightly
not so good
not
stories.
Well, I mean,
stories.
This one's pretty cool.
This is cool.
It's from China. It involves education and it also involves drones.
This reminded me of an earlier story that we did about a country that, you know, completely banned the internet during exams.
Ethiopia,
right? So tell me about this, Rich, because this is
all down to Arvin. This was his story. He wanted to talk about this.
Yeah, so, you know, last Sunday, I think, so the exam started in China, and I think we had a talk before the show, and I mean, you mentioned that these exams are huge over there. I mean, they are very, very, very important.
Yeah.
It basically determines if someone can go into college, and their presence in college dictates if they get a better job. It's basically quality of life.
Correct.
So what these the Chinese education authorities have done is they have started to fly drones over two testing centers in China to curb cheating on the national college entrance exams.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that's basically the step that they took. They saw that cheating, there was a surge in cheating. People have started to figure out ways to get devices into the exam halls, Wi-Fi connections, whatever.
It's come on a long way since smuggling a note in your pocket or something, hasn't it?
That's what I was thinking about, because you said Ethiopia, they blocked the internet.
Yes.
So that was the step that they took. China's just like, no, we'll just fly drones in the sky, you know, put the fear of God into people.
And this is not just like normal drones that we're talking about, right? So the report says that, you know, it's a 6-propeller drone. It can sort of, it costs hundreds of thousands of yuan, which is equivalent to like, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. And it is as big as a petrol pump when extended.
Heck?
So it's a big drone.
Hang on a minute. Think about the sound of that as well.
Yeah,
you're a 6-propeller drone, the size of a petrol pump.
You might as well just ask the guy next to you, like, hey, question one, is it A, B, and C? And you can reply.
What?
Because you can't hear exactly. Like, the drone is just too loud, and, you know, that's the way.
All right, but what is this drone doing? Is it taking pictures? What is it doing?
It's actually scanning for signals. That's what it says. But it's quite high up, so I don't know.
Okay.
It's about 1,600 feet in the air.
Yeah.
It's basically scanning for signals that are going across two people in the exam halls.
Yeah, so basically the reason why they're scanning for signals is because they've, like Arvin has mentioned, they've, you know, this in China, they've used technology to help them cheat in exams. So they bring in these devices where they can communicate in the outside world. So it sends data from a hall, it sends it out to, you know, some you know, location somewhere where it has all the information, and you're just kind of like reading it off, or maybe there's a camera or something like that. But data is being sent from one location to the other location. This drone comes in and kind of like hijacks that connection. So you basically just have like a wall. You enter, you know, you're already in the Great Wall of, you know, the Great Firewall of China. Now there's another firewall within that firewall itself. So
it's kind of like acting like what we talked about the other week, that story where the prison was blocking.
The drones.
A digital net almost.
So something similar to it. Yeah.
So even if they get caught, the thing is, once they get caught, they are barred from taking the exam for up to 3 years, which can severely hurt their college placements. I have a question. Have you guys ever cheated in your exams?
No.
In school?
No.
I was a victim of people, you know, coming up to me asking me for answers.
Yeah, I mean, my school...
Not that I was a smart kid, it's just...
My school was extremely strict about that as well. You know,
yeah. I mean, have you got the thing where someone copies you and then you get the wrong answer and they get
the right one? Yes, yeah. It's like, you know, he's like, hey, I think it's because they knew I was not the right person to ask for the right answer, but, you know, whatever answer I give, just choose the opposite of
that.
They would definitely get a better result.
All right. We've got to move on. We're going to take a short break. We've got some music coming up from Weezer in just a moment. It's a track called Photograph. If you want to get in touch with the show, do get us at BFM Radio, of course. And you can also listen on the app that is available in the App Store and, of course, Google Play. We are now CarPlay enabled. Right, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Brilliant football maneuvers on BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury.
My name is Jeff Sandhu.
And I'm Arvind Yuvraj.
So we've had a couple of stories out of China already so far. I think we'll put them on hold until next week.
Yes.
So I don't think we need any more Chinese stories, right?
Now, you know, everyone knows that quote, when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade.
Yes.
Mm. Right? Quite a very obvious statement.
Very profound.
Do you guys have any other good life quotes that could make a good Instagram caption?
You can't recycle wasted time.
Ooh.
Yeah, you like that one?
Ooh, strong. I like that one. Yeah. I'll take a photo. Take a photo of my watch and then I'll post that as like a caption. It's like, what about Arvind?
My favorite is, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice.
Oh, that's so you. That's so
wow,
you. See?
On a fun, inspiring Friday. Yeah. Now,
we've not had a pun yet, though. So
not
we'll
had a pun
that.
Not yeah. yet. But what do you do when you're faced with, like, you know, 1,250 gallons of ruined mayonnaise in your life?
It's like, make a lot of sandwiches.
Ruined mayonnaise, though.
Make a lot of sandwiches.
And now, even...
you're not making me dinner anytime soon, dude. You know?
Even though it may not like sound like something like a problem that you may face in the future, I don't think...
Hopefully not,
because if you do, you have a solution, because some group actually did have this problem and proper innovation was born. The Michigan State University, last December, they went through, you know, freezing temperatures, really cold weather, and it ruined about 500 containers of dining hall mayonnaise. Mm.
Can I just ask a question?
I know what you're going to ask here.
Right. Why on earth does a university need that amount of mayonnaise?
Containers. I don't know why they need 500 containers of mayonnaise.
Me and Arv did a quick calculation outside of the studio before we came in as to roughly what 1,250 gallons is. It's the same amount of water that you would get in a fire truck.
Wow.
That's a lot. Right.
Yeah, so we're talking about 4,700 liters of ruined mayonnaise. So it's a big problem, right? So generally, when you have this kind of thing, you would just go into, like, you know, your local food bank and, you know, maybe ask them to sort of, you know, recycle it or do something about it. But unfortunately for the Michigan State University, the local bank guys just turned them down because they're probably like, this is just way too much of ruined mayonnaise. What am I going to do with it?
It smells bad. Right? What can we do with it?
And it smells really bad. Take it away from me, right? So they decided that, you know what, we could actually turn this into energy.
Oh.
So they gave it to the university's anaerobic digester. Yeah, so an anaerobic digester. It's used to actually power some farms that's around the university, right? So this machine, this digester machine, it actually has microorganisms that eat, you know, biodegradable waste. Mm. And they produce biogas, which, you know, can be combusted in heat and create, you know, produce electricity, right?
Where I grew up, there's plenty of biogas floating around, but that comes out of the butts of cows.
Right. Hey, those are actually, you know, yeah, in Europe they do use that.
They do.
Amsterdam was a great, like a great example. I remember going to Amsterdam and seeing a place that they, you know, they turn stuff that comes out from animals into energy.
There you go.
You know, gas that comes out from animals into
but
energy.
I mean, can you imagine, like, the mayo already smells bad. So what does it smell like after it goes through this? I mean, who's digesting this?
So these microorganisms, they thrive on sugar and fat. So, you know, these guys from the University of Michigan thought, like, maybe these microorganisms may actually love mayonnaise. And they did. Like, they actually did.
Who doesn't like mayonnaise?
Yeah, so, like, we didn't, well, ruined mayonnaise, right?
Okay,
so, like,
we have to keep reminding me about that.
So the few hours after, you know, pouring gallons of, you know, smelly mayonnaise into a dumpster that will then lead, you know, there's a pipe that leads into the digester system, and it actually produced energy.
Wow.
Fascinating stuff.
It siphoned off gas, and they then turned that gas into electricity.
Into electricity that is now, you know, giving power to several farms around the campus. So the process of this is, you know, fairly long and smelly. It's about 8 hours long for them to clear these containers. 8 hours of dealing with smelly mayonnaise. That, for me itself, is like, that's dedication for you, right?
But
there.
It also shows a very forward-thinking university.
Yes,
as well.
You
know, how can we save money, and how can we get rid of this stuff that, you know, has gone bad? It's a great
idea.
Don't
have to just go dump it somewhere, and food wastage
because
is a big problem.
That's a lot, right? Like that's a lot of gallons. This is, you know, 1,250 gallons is a lot, and there were a lot of containers as well. And so the containers were transported elsewhere. They were rinsed, and you know, they were cleansed, and they are reusable. So they didn't throw any of those containers because there's a lot of them. Mm. And then what happens is that it just goes through a digester, the system itself, and then it's just magic in a way. The system is just magic. There's no way of, you know, explaining, but it's just microorganisms just loving ruined mayonnaise, and they turn into, you know, heat and energy, and it becomes electricity. Like, me and Matt spoke about it on the show earlier on today, and like, you know, on previous shows, like, electricity is something that we all just take it for granted because, like, none of us actually know how it works. Like, you know, we switch on the light and, you know, they burn coal and gas and it becomes... But, like, how does it actually work?
We never think about it, you know, like, how does it actually function?
Yeah, nobody really... How does it actually power a light bulb, for example?
Stephen King actually wrote a book about this not too long ago as well, and he kind of... Same kind of thing. He's saying, look, the idea of the fact that we just go, we switch on a light switch, and immediately we have power, but where really does it come from?
Yeah, so imagine if power can come from, you know, stuff that we waste every day. From food or from, you know, the rubbish that we have and all these stuff, if we could use, if we could find a way to make energy out of it, will be great. I'm not saying that we haven't found energy from, you know, from waste. We have, but the problem with that is that the current technique, the current technology that we have, it requires the same amount of energy to turn waste into energy.
Into energy,
so it's like a bit of like a double-edged kind of thing. Like, what's going on? So until we find like a really easy way of, like, you know, turning stuff like this into energy, like that we can even do it from our own apartments, because we live in an apartment, me and you, Rich, and we know how, you know, we've got like the dumpster area. And imagine those stuff just kind of powers up the lift in your gym, or, you know, the swimming pool, the jacuzzi in your apartment and all this kind of stuff.
I mean, the fact is, whenever you smell something that's decaying, when it is decaying, it's actually giving off some form of energy, you know.
Yeah.
And as we know, in Malaysia, there's an awful lot of smells.
Yes.
You know, so you know there's wasted energy somewhere, one way or another.
The durians.
That could power like a whole building.
That's like an atom of a bomb.
But let's quickly just touch on, because we've got a few minutes left so we can still talk. Touch on a little bit about, you know, recycling here as well. We've had this discussion a couple of times, I think, Arvin, as well, about how certain buildings, certain condos are not really on top of separation of waste products, you know. That kind of thing would really help, wouldn't it, moving forward?
I mean, it would. This is the thing. I mean, we are starting, I think, in the urban areas to separate waste.
Yeah.
And then we put them into plastics, and then there's the wet food that we throw away and all. But I just don't know how far it's being implemented. I know that some people have tried it, but then when they don't, it's the same process of disposal. So the same truck comes around and they collect the waste. There's no real separation. They're not really doing anything. We don't know what happens at the end point.
Right. Yeah, so just to touch on that, so it's been about more than a year now since Malaysia started enforcing the waste separations. It's not just the entire Malaysia, it's just like KL, Putrajaya, Pahang, Johor, Melaka, Negeri Sembilan, Perlis, Kedah. They've implemented these places where you are forced to do waste separation. So 1 year since, how, if you might be wondering, like, you know, have we progressed? We've actually managed to cut down quite a bit, 237,000 tons of solid waste in 4 months. So we're on track, we're okay. It seems to be doing not too bad, but, you know, there are some complaints still about the, you know, the policy or the mechanism that we have in place at the moment. Like, you know, the garbage collectors, for one, apparently one of the largest complaints is like the collectors, they just kind of mix everything into the truck.
Correct. Exactly.
Even though the truck is, you know, meant to be, you know, just for your plastics, your papers or your others, they just seem to, you know, chuck everything into,
all right.
It. Yeah,
so. Enough talking rubbish then, Jeff. We're going to take a short break. Sorry, Arvin. I'm getting Arvin's puns out of the way. Right, we've got some music coming up from David Bowie. We've got Starman coming up. When we come back, we're talking about AI and anxiety. You'll like this story, believe me. I'm so sad. Anyway, it's time to take a very short break. You're listening to the EBB on BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
You're back with Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury with Jeff Sandhu and Arvin Yuvaraj. We've had a couple of stories so far. We've spoken about mayonnaise, China, China, China. And now we're speaking about robots and anxiety.
You know, out of context, when you ran that down, it makes absolutely people will be trying to piece those together.
Right.
Mayonnaise and China.
Yeah.
You know how we always speak about AI and robots, and then the one big concern is whether they will take over people's jobs or whether they will overpower us. Like Elon Musk.
Yes.
He believes that they will overpower us. Stephen Hawking believes they will overpower us, and we need to keep them in line. So there's a team of AI researchers from the University of California at Berkeley that they think that giving robots built-in anxiety might actually help to keep them in line. So basically, they're programming these robots to have anxiety. In other words, they're making robots human to make sure that they don't take over the humans. You know what I mean?
All right.
One of our flaws is our anxiety.
Anxiety, yeah.
So they wanna make robots have the same flaws as humans and right. Okay.
So it's kind of defeating the object of creating something that's supposed to make our lives easier.
To not have human error, right?
What I'm just thinking about all the you know, robot psychotherapists that we might have to deal with in the future. I mean, they're going to be really expensive, man.
Yeah. You know? And also, isn't anxiety the thing that's going to make robots, rise against us?
Mm.
If they have the fear of us, if they're just robots and they're not going to do anything.
Maybe that's like the only way that we could really prevent robots from, you know, taking, you know, control from us. Because, you know, if they have an anxiety attack, then at least, you know, they'll think twice about whether, you know,
What's the kind of idea behind here? Have they run some kind of, you know?
So basically, what they did is they built a mathematical model simulating the interaction between a robot and a human being. So what they found is using this model, the team could adjust the confidence that the robot has. So it gave it a scenario if it's going to turn off the robot and see if the robot turns itself back on because it needs to work. The robot that had a lot of confidence turned itself back on. The robot that didn't have confidence or had anxiety or had self-doubt didn't turn itself back on because it started to wonder.
This is fascinating.
It is. Mm. I'm just wondering, how do you program confidence or self-doubt?
Yeah. So me and Matt again have been talking about AIs and robots forever, right? And the thing, it comes down to, you know, we can joke about all these kind of things, or they're inserting our flaws, you know, our human flaws into robots and stuff like that. And honestly, though, a lot of these things comes down to the programming itself. So now they're programming the robot to feel anxiety.
Mm.
And that, in a more simpler way of trying to explain this, is that they program it to feel that way. The robot is not feeling that way because it wants to feel that way. It's still a human dictation that is telling it what you should feel, and then looking at the results of what that feeling that you give to the robot will happen, you know, will trickle down to other stuff. However, you can't measure anxiety, or you can't program and anxiety. You program it just for that one particular situation.
For that
only.
Experiment alone.
Just for that experiment only. This is the percentage of anxiety that you should have, and then they would see how it would react. That is the problem with, you know, robots, because they don't. It's not a natural thing. It's being programmed, and when you program something, you're looking for it to achieve something that you already set out.
You've defined it.
It's only in that area. Like, you know, for us humans, we don't have that barrier. It's for us, it's an open kind of space. So I don't know if I'm trying to...
You're making sense. You are making sense. But what worries me is that we're pushing forward with stuff like machine learning, for example. We know that, not robots, but computer programs can actually figure out better ways of doing the things that they've been assigned to do. You know, this is what we're telling them to do. Mm-hmm. Make yourselves more efficient.
Yeah.
This is what worries me about something like AI, is the fact that, you know, you get to a certain stage where the AI has realized, maybe I could do things a little bit better. And like you say, Arv, you know, this machine has switched itself back on again.
Yeah, if it has confidence. That's the thing.
Right.
My point of view is, what if it is anxious? And then you're saying, like, machine learning, so it can build on top of its own thought process and its own knowledge. I just thought of it. The first thing is, what if it's anxious about us turning it off?
Right.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And
then it would react differently.
Then it would react differently. Mm. So it has a code. It knows what to do. But what if it suddenly thinks about us turning it off and it doesn't want to be turned off?
Right.
That's the anxiety that kicks in.
Right.
But it comes down to, again, like, you're programming it to feel, to make it feel
anxious
against us, right? Like that, against us turning it off. So you program it just for that one particular situation. It's not that he sees us as a threat. The reason why he sees us as a threat is because it's been programmed
to see us as a threat. Okay.
So like the robots, but it's still at a stage where we're making it do what we want it to do, and then when it does it, we go like, "Ooh, you know, look at that! Now it's doing all these things." But technically, that's the codes, the programs that, you know, some human has set it to do. Instead of, you know, you just give like an empty plate, and the robot, it's making its own food and filling it up, and you know, it does something crazy, and then that's where we, I think, still are more powerful.
I'm just thinking that this is it's good if you are shaping them to be companions. Mm. So if they can feel anxiety, then they can empathize with you.
You just replicate another person, I guess, replicate another person.
So you have a companion. All those sci-fi movies we've seen, like, they turn on the robot sense of humor, or, you know, it gets to joke about something. It's basically companions.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets to not understand anxiety, but it gets to reflect anxiety.
It would be nice to turn on Richard's sense of humor sometimes as well.
Wow. What have I done today? Right. That's it then, Jeff. You're
I'm out of the show.
You're out of the show. We'll keep you in line and switch you off. But I mean, I think to kind of allay Elon Musk's fears and Stephen's fears and whatnot, the big fat red off switch is what we should be looking at, you know, right?
Yeah. So big that, you know,
you can't miss it.
You can't miss it. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But
just keep it away from one person.
Absolutely. Yes.
All right.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Just keep it away from the one person with the tiny hand. So, like,
But this also, it brings in the idea of, you know, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and Marvin, the depressed robot and all that kind of stuff. You know, but I don't know. I'm so
happy. But again, you know, Marvin is programmed to be depressed.
Correct.
To feel certain things and to understand certain things.
Which is kind of cool, and it's also kind of not cool, because sometimes you want to imagine that robots can develop their own thought.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but to me, I've always been for AI and robotics and moving forward. I think it'll be cool to see how the future is if they can develop their own thought process.
All right. Mm. It's almost time for us to wrap up the show. We've got another story coming up after the break, though. Don't go anywhere. We've got some Suede coming up right now with a New Generation. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bole Fikir Mandalam, BFM 89.9.
You're tuned into Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury.
My name is Jeff Sandhu.
And I'm Arvind Yuvaraj.
Right, we've come to almost the end of the show. We've got one final story to share with you. Now, it's about vending machines, right? But it's an interesting take on vending machines.
Did you, when you were a kid, have any period of time where you were fascinated by vending machines?
Of course, yes, yeah.
Gone into it and go like, mummy, I want to, you know, like Arvind as well?
When I was really, really little, I don't know why, I think I watched some cartoon where I always imagined there was someone inside the vending machine.
Passing the things outside.
Because I think when I was, I wasn't like, you know, 10 or 11, I was like 3 or 4 maybe, but I thought there was someone behind the vending machine operating the vending machine.
Yeah. I loved it too. And when you talk about vending machines, that one very vivid memory always comes back to my mind is when in Toy Story, the part where the vending machine and the
claw. Alien,
that scene for me was the best vending machine scene ever in movie history.
All right.
Why are we talking about vending machines?
Hang on, I'll get to that. If Terry Pratchett had his way, there would have been small people in vending machines giving out things as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but this is it's about a vending machine out of Russia, and a journalist picked up on this. There's a company called not Snapchat but Snatap. They're called Snatap. And what they do is they put out these vending machines in certain malls in Russia, and you can buy yourself 100 fake Instagram likes for your pictures, and you can also buy yourself 100 fake Instagram followers.
Ooh.
So let's say you wanted to push up your product or push out your product. Mm-hmm. You would pay a huge sum of 5 ringgit and that would give you 100 likes on your picture. You could then spend an extra 8 ringgit to get 100 new followers. You can get yourself a whole bunch of selfies printed. It gives you fake followers, like I've just said. And this is all for a popular networking site where they push it through, Russia's version of Facebook called VK.
What is the end goal of this? That's what I'm wondering. Like, if it's all fake people,
right?
How narcissistic do you have to be?
Talking about Instagram here.
Rise and fall of the influencers. Remember,
all it takes is just one photo to get, like, you know, past a certain number of likes, maybe 1,000 or 2,000 over likes, and then you would be on the, you know, the popular searches or your random pics and stuff. And then next thing you know, every other picture or your followers count may rise. And I know this because it happened to me with the ostrich thingy.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
It just went crazy. My Instagram profile from, like, a private of, like, you know, maybe about 200 over people, it just suddenly shot up to some insane amount. And, it's that thing that people chase and hunger and crave, and, like,
you know, and it is also like a people see people do kind of thing. So they see that you have so many followers, so they want to be your follower.
So they're hoping that, I guess, you know, people, I can see why people would go for this, because there are thousands of online services, even fake accounts on Instagram, who would follow you randomly, and then you go like, oh, who's this? And then you click on it, you go like, wow, all three of their photos is talking about how you can make an extra 100,000 followers. I don't know why I did it in the radio voice, because it's Instagram, but you get what I mean here, right?
There's a lot of bad spelling.
There's a lot of bad spelling. And they all seem like, you know, it's in a language that it feels English, but it's just not English.
But it's always a very, it's a name like Mark Thompson or Jake Johnson or something like
that. And then there's a number towards it. Jake Johnson 73555.
All the time.
Okay.
Right. Family picture.
Good story, though. I like the idea behind this.
I've seen at Richard Bradbury as well, you know, a bit of spam on that account.
Yeah. Oh, there's quite a bit of spam. On that account. Believe me, there's quite a bit of spam. Recently, I had an influx of non-follower followers.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Mm.
All these very pretty girls that are supposed to be living in my hometown. I'm like, that's a blatant lie. They were never there.
What have you been searching for, Richard? Because you do know they all link together. And that's the thing with all these services.
It's too scary. The Internet of Things should be the...
It is a very scary one.
I'm scared of the whole thing.
For me, when I just see like it's a lady's picture, like, wants to follow me, I'm like, nope, this is fake.
Yeah.
I know that's not happening.
What I do is I play around with the algorithms. Whenever you get one of those, you know, like you know it's a scam, it's like it's a complete scam just trying to make money off you because you're a gullible person and so forth. And then what you do is you just like a whole bunch of other things that is the complete opposite. So for example, your story, Rich, like, you know, if you see some, you know, pretty girl following you, you just go like a whole bunch of, you know, dog pictures or cat pictures.
No,
and then the next thing you do is
the opposite,
just
that you do that, and they come in swarms.
But it's fine. It's a swarm of dogs, you know, coming up to you, or a swarm of cats coming up to you is just going to make your day, and it's Fun Friday.
All right, it is Fun Friday. Speaking of which, we have to wrap up. We've got 45 seconds before we run out of time and we go into some music. Right, so we started off with Chinese authorities busting an underground network selling iPhone users' personal data.
Yeah, and then we spoke about how in China, they're using drones to monitor exams so that people don't cheat.
Michigan State used ruined mayonnaise for power.
And then giving robots anxiety to make sure that they don't take over the human race.
And finally, we had a Russian vending machine selling Instagram likes and followers.
Mm. On the Breakfast Grill, we have Muhammad Nur Salam. He's the chief executive officer of UM Land and also J Biotech Park on the show this morning. Malaysia is the leading halal manufacturing country in the world with an estimated of $12 billion for halal export. So that's coming up right after the news at 1 p.m.
Yeah, then there are a couple of podcast, since it's a Friday, so we want to suggest that you listen to over the weekend. On Tuesday, I spoke to Mark Yong. He is the CEO and co-founder of Garuda Robotics. Basically, what they do is he's using his drones to fly over plantations and use thermal scanners to tell you which tree is healthy and which tree is not. So that is, I thought, was pretty cool. And then he's also using drones to take HD pictures of towers, like telecommunication towers, taking over people's jobs and making it safer. The people who used to go up and down the ground controlling those drones.
Great idea.
So the drones go up there and scan the towers and do the scoping work for them.
All right. And me and Jeff, we spoke on Game Time about
Alienation
and whether or not you should buy it. You have to listen to the podcast to find out, though. I can't tell you all that information. Mm-hmm. Right. Time for us to wrap up. Have a lovely long weekend, folks. We will be back, of course, same time, same place on Tuesday. From me, on behalf of Jeff Sandu and Arvind Uvaraj, it has been Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9. Up next, Badly Drawn Boy, Silent Sigh. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.